Welcome inside the 91.3 WVUD studio. This is Blue Hen Sports Cage. Teddy Gellman with Amid Quadri, Brandon Holvec. We have a lot to get to. Two series, NHL, NBA in the finals.
Last night, Golden State one step closer to their second NBA championship in the past 3 years. They're up 3-0 on the Cleveland Cavaliers. All time in major sports history, teams down 3-0 in playoff series are just 5-345 in the NBA. Nobody has ever come back from 3-0.
Predators-Penguins game is tied at 2-2. The series is tied at 2-2. Game 5 coming up tonight. That's going to be at 8 p.m. on NBC. That's going to be a good one.
Buckle up. It's Blue Hen Sports Cage, the best 2 hours of sports you'll hear this week on 91.3 WVUD. So, the top story that we want to get to immediately is the NBA Finals last night. It sure looked like the Cavaliers had this one. They were up towards the end of the game. Let's do this. I want to hear from both of you in the best way you can, possibly. How can you describe the final, maybe it's a minute and a half, how can you describe the final 60 to 90 seconds in which the Warriors went on an 11-0 run and took a commanding 3-0 series lead?
I'd say that's what it's all about. That game that we had last night was the best one of the NBA season. That's what we follow all of these games through the regular season, through the playoffs, to get to this point. This is what it's all about, seeing who's going to rise up in those big moments. And last night, it was Kevin Durant. LeBron James had an excellent game. Kyrie Irving had his best game of the playoffs, at least in the biggest spot he's been in so far. He's big in Game 3 last year. He showed up. LeBron definitely showed up again. But when push came to shove, Cavaliers never got far enough away. The Warriors were always in striking distance, and Kevin Durant with the little fadeaway shot over Tristan Thompson and then the big step into three in transition really put his mark on the game and I think finished off the Cavaliers in this series. So that's what stands out to me is just in that big moment, sure, maybe LeBron James outplayed Kevin Durant through the entirety of the game, but in those final 2 minutes where the Warriors go on an 11-0 run, it has to be about Kevin Durant, a guy who's taken a lot of flack this season, hasn't been in the NBA Finals in quite some time, but is really making the most of this opportunity.
The one word I want to use is competition, and we can use it in a few different ways. I'll use it first for the Cavs because there hasn't been much competition for them in the East. East known for being, I don't want to say, you know, worse, but not as competitive as the West. That's starting to show now because they coasted through the East for the most part, and now they literally just hit a wall in Kevin Durant and Curry and Draymond Green, and Klay now has arrived as well. And for the Warriors, it's no competition, really. It sucks because you're watching this game. It's close, it's competitive. You think the Cavs might win, but almost feels like on purpose the Warriors just keeping it close and looking for the right time to attack. And Kevin Durant and even Curry making a couple big shots and Klay making a three in the fourth quarter there, kind of was quiet in the fourth quarter, but he had a big three when he needed it. Draymond Green, I've never seen someone be so effective with five fouls, playing with five fouls in the fourth quarter. So, again, competition is a little faded for the Warriors and not enough competition leading up to this for the Cavaliers. And I'm not really too surprised about what Kevin Durant is doing now because that is, what, eight straight finals games for Kevin Durant dating back to 2012 where he has had 30 or 25 points or more and he's averaging about 32 points now, which is absolutely ridiculous. He is just, he's got an act for these finals and he's really showing up. And I think, I forget who it was, I think it was Steve Kerr who said that this is his moment and he's been waiting for this his entire life. And he not only wants that ring, he wants the legacy with the MVP trophy. He wants all of it.
Well, Kyrie Irving scored 38 points. He had a really good game.
Yeah.
And LeBron has 39, and yet people, obviously, in the early portion on Twitter and other shows you listen, people's going to blame LeBron for this and everything. But I think that's a good point you bring up, Amid, that not almost the way you phrased it was the Warriors toying with them, but not a purposeful toying with them, in the sense that the Cavs didn't get far enough ahead. And you could look at that Kyle Korver shot in the corner, and a lot of people say, was that a good pass by LeBron? But if Korver makes the shot, then nobody's saying anything about that. And if he made that, they would have been up. How many were they up? when that pass was made.
At 7 at the most, I think they were up in
the That was their largest lead of the game. At that point in the game, that they were up by 2, because then Durant went to the other end and hit the 3 and put them up by 1.
Yeah, so the Korver 3 would have put Cleveland up by 5, and then...
11-0 run, I think... J.R. Smith has the final 3. He goes gun in the holster. I remember it's a 6-point lead after that. And 11-0, they won by 5, and there was no turning back after that.
Yeah, so people are going to look at that Korver one and say, was that the best look or so? But, I mean, you could look back and say that, whatever, 2012, 2011, whenever the pass went was to Ray Allen in Miami, and he made that
2013,
shot.
2013.
It's a similar type of situation where you get a 3-point shooter out in the corner.
Said, like, if he hits that shot, then it's a great read by LeBron James.
Sure.
And you're going to give that shot to Kyle Korver. He's one of the best three-point shooters of all time. It's a pretty open look. I mean, Curry closes out well, but it's a good look. So I don't have any problem with that play. It's just a make-or-miss league, and Kevin Durant made his on the other end, and Korver missed it.
And then back on the other end, you saw LeBron go ISO after the Durant shot, and he didn't get a good look out of it. Couple possessions here and there. Warriors make some free throws. And that's it. And a stunned Quicken Loans Arena, that's it. Cleveland goes down 3-0. And what did LeBron say after the game? I've never played a team with that much firepower. And he's right there. You can get into a whole deep discussion about it.
Kind of sounds like a white flag to me.
Yeah.
A little bit of throwing in the towel.
To LeBron's credit, he said that before this series even started, which I think was a little bit of him hedging, saying, you know, like...
If I lose... It's not on me.
Yeah. And if I win, then this is going to be the biggest accomplishment
right,
of my career.
Correct.
Like, when they finished off Boston, he said, I've never played a team that good. They're a juggernaut. And I mean, we're seeing that right now.
LeBron always has to throw the disclaimer in there.
And Klay Thompson had 30 points, but the amount of weapons that this team has, and you look at their scoring, and I'm not going to add it all up right now, but you had 31 from Durant, 26 from Curry, and 30 from Thompson. So those three scored the bulk of their points. The Warriors bench did absolutely nothing. But it doesn't have to do anything. Whereas you look
at... I look at Andre Iguodala plus 10, 30 minutes, strips the ball from LeBron in the corner. I think he was an impact player.
Defensively.
Sure.
I'm speaking offensively.
Yeah, they don't need any scoring offense.
Yeah.
True. And then you look at... I'm just going to show the disparity between these teams. And then you look at Cleveland, and people say, why do they have such a washed-up bench? What is Darren Williams doing? Richard Jefferson, he competed. He competed hard. I like the way he played.
He does every game.
Yeah, he does. Iman Shumpert, he's not an offensive threat. And Korver missed, you know... 4 of the 6 threes that he attempted, and people are going to look at him and say, I expect him to make more. So
I think you have to stay in the starting lineup for the Cavs. You have to look at guys like Tristan Thompson.
No points.
He's being out. He's being almost tripled.
One shot.
Tripled on the rebounding stat by Curry, by Stephen Curry. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And when you look at Kevin Love, he had a good, he had a couple good games in Oakland, but then he didn't have to do as much. Yet last night, Kyrie was doing it all. So they had that threat.
Yeah.
But the difference
I liked the game from Love just real quick. He didn't have the scoring impact, but on the boards, he had the one series where he had 3 straight offensive rebounds. He
that kind of got the crowd into it.
They needed that physicality. They didn't have that in games 1 and 2. I thought he brought something extra. Only scored 9 points, but like you said, when Kyrie scores 38, he doesn't need
13,
to be that
13
and
rebounds.
These quote-unquote NBA experts, I feel like, aren't still not satisfied with Love, but... I would give Love benefit of the doubt. I think he's been one of the best players for the Cavs this series. I'll give it to him. I think he's having a great series. I don't see how much more you can expect to him. Can he do more for the Cavs scene? Of course, everybody can. But Love is giving you what you need him to give you. He's having one of the best postseasons of his career. So I think you kind of have to, you know, point the finger maybe at yourself if you're LeBron or Irving. Irving with a unneeded kind of step back 3 when he was getting inside. I didn't like that shot at all, no.
And we can keep going on and on statistics-wise and the plays and the plays, but you mentioned it. You said maybe LeBron, for both of you, preparing himself for if he wins the series, it's the greatest ever, and if he loses, well, I'm playing the best team, arguably. I'm not going to get into it, all-time, recent history,
one
whatever.
Of the best, of course.
Sure, one of the best. And the firepower that they have, just so many weapons, just to see that Draymond Green goes out there, and he did not have a very great game. I mean, he got in foul trouble.
To Ahmed's point, though, he had effective minutes when he was out there. The foul trouble hurt them, but he's the highest in plus-minus on the Warriors.
He had
plus
14. four fouls in the third
Leads
quarter,
the whole game.
Picked up that fifth one with, 7 minutes left, 6 minutes left?
Yeah.
You know, Kerr throws him in there.
Which is just crazy because you could look at that line at a glance. He scores 9 points and say, oh, not a great game from Draymond. Mm-hmm. But they just have so many options. Okay, you don't do your first tool like Klay Thompson in game one.
Yeah.
Well, just go defend well and you can make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's kind of been doing that all series. I don't think he's had like over 15 or 14 scoring any game this season. I feel like he scores single digits, but he's making an impact on the offensive defensive end of the floor. But I think a lot of players are actually doing that. Even Klay, 3-for-16 was it the first game? Didn't really do anything, but defensively he was there. So shout out to the Warriors for not really caring about that stat line or not getting too into the numbers, but just doing everything they can. Every second is valuable for them every time they're on the floor making an impact, because guys like Andre Iguodala and even a guy like David West, who I wasn't a big fan of, came in there big minutes.
And in this series, you can't be a one-way player. If you're Tristan Thompson and you come in, you're a defensive liability automatically. He comes in for one possession. They get the switch to Kevin Durant. Durant attacks. If you're a one-way player in this series against Golden State, they will find that mismatch and they will exploit it every single time because they have the best players. They have the most talent in this series. And to me, I think it comes down to their fourth best player is probably Klay Thompson or Draymond Green, and Cleveland's is J.R. Smith or Tristan Thompson. It's not even. It's not an even fight.
Let's go to the phones. Eric Allen is here, and Eric down in UVA. Before we talk hockey, Eric, happy early birthday. You're about, 6.5 hours away?
Something like that, and happy birthday to you, too. You're about the same. 6.5, and maybe throwing an extra 5 minutes.
Yeah, you got it. I will say to both Brandon and Amit and anybody listening, Eric texted me at, last night at midnight, he was like 24 hours. And then he texted me this morning at 1, or at 1 in the afternoon, he was like 11 hours. So I appreciate the updates, Eric.
Yeah, I think you too. I was busy in class, and you sent me a 9-hour update to help me get through class. But, yeah.
I expect one from you at 6 o'clock, and then I'll take the 7 and so forth, you know.
All right, yeah, go spread the workout.
Well, I hope that, while you're getting ready for the birthday tonight, you have a game to watch. And your Penguins are coming home now tied at 2 with the Nashville Predators. And Nashville took 2 at home after the Penguins took 2 at home. 2-2 we are. How are you feeling based on this series? I remember you said last week, you said you were tired, but I assured you that there was a little bit more confidence in your voice than typical. You said you were tired, but I'm telling you, there's more confidence in your voice. I'm not sure if it's excitement, whether the birthday's coming up, but you seem all right now. How you feeling based on the way the series is headed?
You know, I've had some insight into the games, as you may say. I don't know how to phrase it better. But, you know, I'm feeling pretty good today about the game. The last 2 games, I was a little worried. That's kind of how my intuition or gut's been going, is how the game's usually been going. So I've been feeling pretty good about today. I think the Nationals' home crowd definitely helped them. But since the Penguins do have home ice, they have 2 more games at home. Tonight's a must-win, and I think that the fans behind them, and getting some momentum off game 4, because I think they did play pretty well. Just had some trouble getting the puck past Pecorine. I think that they're in good shape to come home for game 5 and put on a solid performance.
Eric, you called this a must-win game tonight for the Penguins. With that being said, do you think that for the Penguins to win this series, it's got to be a win in game 5 tonight and then a win in game 7 back home? Is Nashville's home ice too difficult to play?
No, I don't think so at all, but I think it would definitely make the road a lot easier if they won tonight, because as you might recall last year, the Penguins were down 3-2 in the Tampa Bay Lightning series in the Eastern Conference Finals, and Tampa in the playoffs, they have some pretty good energy at home, and the Penguins were able to go in there and take game 6 at home, but then steal game 7 2-0 from a pair of Brian Rust goals in game 7 to move to the Stanley Cup Finals. And, you know, that could easily be something that happens this year, because I think their record's like 11-1 Nashville at home. That's hard to maintain, but they definitely got a boost. They get a boost from their home fans. And it's a tough building to play in, but, you know, I think the Penguins are facing some real adversity. The D pair's really banged up, which I'm sure we'll talk in a second. I could easily see a maybe 7D or maybe putting Chad Ruedel in, taking either Hainsey or Mata out. But they need to do something because when you do have home ice, you get the matchups that you want. So that, I think that's the biggest thing in the series is that they're targeting our weaker pair of Ds. Our whole defense is pretty depleted and a lot of playing injured, but, you know, it's the playoffs, so you got to be able to overcome that and just win the game.
Well, here's a stat for you, Eric. The home team in this series has scored a total of 9 goals in the 2 games at home. Penguins scored 5 in Game 1, 4 in Game 2, make it 9. Nashville scored 5 in Game 3 and 4 in Game 4 for 9 total there. And the away team has scored 1 goal in every game this series with the exception of Game 1 when Nashville scored 3. So do you look at this series as a tale of who's got home ice, or is this coincidence?
I mean, home ice definitely helps in the playoffs, especially in hockey, because you really do get those energetic fans, which you might not get in basketball since they probably already know what's going to happen, but throw some shade at basketball. But, you know, I think both teams have great fans. Nashville, it's just incredible and crazy. Because I know a month or two ago I talked maybe going to Nashville for my birthday and going to a game, but to go to Game 6, starting price of tickets, he had a pair of tickets is like $15,000 and going as high as like $30,000 for a pair of tickets. And that's just ridiculous. And that's not your average hockey fan. But it's a music city. They've got their celebrities and they're really able to fill up seats. And that's good for the team. They make a lot of money. But, you know, Pittsburgh, they have the atmosphere around. But just in Nashville, they've got one or two big screens set up. And, you know, I think that both teams really feed off that energy from their home team or their home crowd.
Blue Hen Sports Cage here, 91.3 WVUD. We are talking to Eric Allen, who's turning 21 tonight and is a big Penguins supporter. Game 5 is tonight between the Penguins and the Predators back in Pittsburgh. So, Eric, the goalie matchup has been something we've been highlighting this entire series in that there were question marks over Pekka Rinne's performance in the crease for Nashville. He comes out, he plays very well at home. Now Matt Murray giving up those 9 goals in 2 games. What did you see from him, and what do you expect coming home in Game 5?
You know, I expect a strong performance. That's the first time in the playoffs Matt Murray's lost back-to-back games. So, you know, I don't see him going 2 in a row. There was a little bit of question, maybe go to Fleury, but really I wouldn't put any of Game 4 on Matt Murray. I think he played well. Game 3, he was a little shaky, but you know, you look in the other end of the ice, you see Pekka Rinne, who only has 2 career wins against the Penguins, and both those come at home in the last 2 games. So maybe he's finding some confidence there. Maybe it's the home crowd giving him some confidence. But, you know, I don't think neither of them have earned the Conn Smythe in this series, but neither of them have been the sole reason that their teams have been losing, I don't think. Maybe you could say Game 1, Pekka Rinne, but you know, you need your team to be scoring to help out the goal. You're not going to win a game with a 1 goal.
So there, it's now a best 2 of 3 because we're tied at 2. So Game 5 in Pittsburgh tonight. Game 6 would be in Nashville and Game 7 back in Pittsburgh. As objective as you can be as a fan of one of the teams who's playing in this, which team do you think is in a better position to win this series?
Well, I think a lot of it relies on Nick Bonino and his health. They're missing their third-line center, and I thought that, surprisingly, Malkin and Crosby's minutes weren't as high as I expected. So I expect those to come up a little bit, whether he plays or not. If he does not play, I wouldn't go with Carter Rowney as a third-line center. I would probably go with 7D, dress Hainsey or Chad Ruedel, give you some more speed. And I think he's fresher and a little bit better than those the bottom pair. Maybe straight to help the power play, because I think that's a big thing. Penguins' power play has like 4 shots and is 1 for 12. That needs to improve if they want to win the Stanley Cup. So, you know, if you give more minutes to your better players, obviously Kessel and Malkin really need to step up their game. They've been pretty invisible. And you just feel like something's coming because those two, they don't like to stay off the score sheet for too long. And I know Kessel, he has his cup, but he still wants to prove that he's a Stanley Cup champion, because he was pretty embarrassed and disgraced in his time in Toronto. So, you know, I think that the Penguins, with Sid and the kids back together, might have a pretty good chance in this game. So I'll probably take them. I'll probably go like 5-3 game. I think this one could be high scoring on both teams.
All right, guys, so you heard Jake's take on Kaepernick. I'll go first. I'm sick of it. My honest opinion is because I was reading something the other day.
Sick of what exactly? What part of this are you sick
of? I'm sick of the fact that he's still a topic of conversation. That he, like, why, like, my question, like, what I'm legitimately wanting to know is why Colin Kaepernick receives this much publicity. It's because of his kneeling in the national anthem. Like, it's because of that. So because he did that for this season, he has suddenly become, it's like a lower case of LeVar Ball, to be totally honest. It's like somebody that,
I have to disagree a little bit with that one.
No.
I mean,
I think the purpose of the attention that Colin Kaepernick sought and found is far different than why LeVar Ball is in the public spotlight.
Well, I'm saying now.
Which, like, makes it different.
I agree with you, and I may have gone too far with that comparison. I don't want to sound like social justice and rooting for your kid in a over-the-top way to bash other people are equal, because they're not. So let me take that back, because thanks for pointing that out. But to an extent, I don't know why his whole thing that he did in the fall has carried over this much, because Jake mentioned it. Like, Kaepernick is a backup quarterback. He's not, like, he's a starting quarterback on some teams, because some teams don't have quarterbacks, but overall, like, there are guys on the street right now that used to be starting quarterbacks that we're not talking about. So why is a guy like Colin Kaepernick receiving this much attention? He did his thing. Somebody wants to sign him. They would have already, right? Well, why is he still out there? Why is there still conversation?
Here's the thing. There's about three quarterbacks on each NFL roster, third string. That's 90 quarterbacks. If you're going to tell me there's 89, if you can name me 89 quarterbacks right now better than Colin Kaepernick, you're lying or you're crazy or you're insane. Colin Kaepernick, at the end of the day, deserves to be on an NFL team. I know there has been a lot of negative energy and negative talks related to what he had, what he did or didn't do for that matter in the previous NFL seasons. He deserves to be on an NFL team. I'm not saying he's a starter. I'm not saying he deserves big bucks, but he deserves to be on an NFL team. It's starting to become to the point where you're kind of scared. Do I want him on a team? Is there baggage that he brings? What's going to happen if I bring him on a team? Is he going to kneel again? I think that thought process is thought of too much. So I don't think that NFL owners and management and the NFL maybe in general isn't going about it the right way. I'm not necessarily siding with Colin Kaepernick, but I think the whole situation is dumb, because I think people are not just thinking of football, they're thinking outside of football. And if that's the case, you got people that are accused of much worse things, like domestic abuse and other things. Yeah.
Here's the thing too, like, in some people's eyes, regardless of how the three of us feel, kneeling during the national anthem is not a bad thing. So I think why this is a topic of conversation is because there are some people who feel like NFL owners and general managers are blackballing, in a way, Colin Kaepernick, because, like you said, Ahmed, there's not a reason why he shouldn't be on an NFL roster because of his playing ability. Yes, he's probably not a starting quality quarterback in this league, but he's certainly better than Austin Davis, who the Seattle Seahawks just signed instead of him, and he's better than a lot of quarterbacks that are on NFL rosters right now. I don't understand why his off-the-field, quote-unquote, concerns or issues, which is kneeling for the national anthem, is somehow worse than other things that NFL teams put up with to have players come play on their team. Tyreek Hill punched his girlfriend in the stomach, and he's on an NFL team. Joe Mixon, similar deal. He just got drafted in round 2 of the NFL draft. He's going to be on an NFL team.
And we saw what happened, yeah.
Who's a backup quarterback right now for the Seattle Seahawks, who nobody even knows who he is because he's not as good as Colin Kaepernick. He assaulted a police officer when he was in school. He's on an NFL team. So I don't understand why what Colin Kaepernick did, if you didn't like it or you liked it, I don't understand how that comes even close to what some of these other players who are on NFL rosters have done. I don't understand why somebody doesn't take a chance on him as a backup quarterback, because there's no way he's worse than an Austin Davis or a Trayvon Boykin on the field.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. Maybe a distinction, I'm just proposing this. This may or may not be true to any way, but all those things that you mentioned were off the field, other things. So people saw the distraction that the Kaepernick kneeling had on already a very bad 49ers team, but the amount of attention, the distraction that it had. And so from the owner's perspective, likely in their thought processes, I don't want that distraction, because it was a distraction. So in their minds, if he comes, it's still going to be a distraction from all of the other people who are bringing up this conversation in about, well, you know what, he's better than guys that have been signed right now. What he did was totally illegal. They're right too. So to an extent, they're both kind of right. I think that at this point, the longer it's gone, the less likely that he's going to be signed, of course, because owners have continued to look and look and think and say, well, if you're not going to take a chance on it, I'm not going to do it. I'll sign somebody else and I'll just deal with it, because if he's not going to start a game for me, then I'm not going to risk that to have somebody sitting on the bench.
True. But I think that he could add value to a team like the Seattle Seahawks as a backup quarterback. And I guess not every NFL... I just find it hard to believe that there's 30 NFL owners that can't see past those distractions, quote-unquote. Because if you're the San Francisco 49ers, did him kneeling during the national anthem change anything that happened on the field during a game? I don't think it did. I don't think it distracted players that were at practice. Nobody's come out and said, I don't want to be on Colin Kaepernick's team. Has anybody said that? Nope. So I don't see how that affects your team. Sure, maybe it isn't a good from a publicity standpoint, but there are also a lot of people on the other side who praised what he did. So
not the owners, though. Like,
true. So that's the discussion here. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, we have a lot of like-minded owners that I guess don't like this move, where there's probably a lot of people who do and there's a lot of people who don't. But I see Colin Kaepernick as a guy who could add value to an NFL team. And I understand why he hasn't been signed, but I don't see how that's equal to some other things that have not prevented other players from being signed.
What do leaders of athletic departments, of organizations, of NFL owners are the top, like the cream of the crop in terms of leaders of right. organizations. What do they try to do, as any leader would do, like uphold the best image of their team? So it's a very selfish mindset. Like, I don't like that caused drama, so I don't really care what he can do on the field, but I don't want it. So I'm just going to take a chance on somebody else.
Sure.
So Colin Kaepernick is still loose on the street. Maybe somebody will sign him. Otherwise, he has not... Yeah, go ahead, Amin.
I mean, crazy to think that a guy who was literally one play away 4 years ago from winning the Super Bowl just can't even get a third-string job out of 30 teams in the NFL.
Some news that came out the other day. There is, now Danny Rocco, the football head coach, said a couple weeks ago, maybe even a month or so ago, that Joe Walker is our starter, we have who we have, but there continued to be speculation that maybe they would bring somebody in, and we have a transfer.
J.P. Caruso from Appalachian State is the newest Blue Hen and will compete for that starting position with Joe Walker. There wasn't a lot of experience behind Joe Walker. Nobody had taken a snap in a game. They have Pat Kehoe and Christian Fortelli, who was a walk-on. Kehoe, just a sophomore, doesn't have any game experience. So they bring in another quarterback who has never been a full-time starter at Appalachian State, but has been their backup for, I believe, at least the last year. So he has some game experience, and he'll have an opportunity to come in here. And I wouldn't imagine take much to take the starting spot from Joe Walker as we kind of get into this discussion here, especially based off what we saw in the spring game. I know it's a small sample size, but the three, maybe four interceptions in that game, it's not a promising sign. So if you're J.P. Caruso, you're probably coming into Delaware thinking, I can steer this ship, and we have some good running backs in the backfield and a good defense. We could be a competitive team.
Exactly, and from a fan's perspective, looking at this, that's what you say. You look at this right. And you say, okay, well, there's no threat here. If this guy is our quarterback, great. If Joe Walker is our quarterback, we're not losing anything. If absolutely anything, maybe he's overhyped. I'm just playing a devil's right. advocate here. Maybe he's not who people think he is, but maybe the competition makes Joe Walker play better. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, the worst thing that happens is he throws for 50 yards in the first two games and gets benched. And then you're back to Joe Walker, who averaged 97 yards a game. I don't see him, you know, he's not going to take this team back too many steps, and he could potentially take them forward more.
Yeah, so if you're a Blue Hens fan, you like it. With a good running game, a good offensive line, good defense, a very well-rounded team, but still that question mark at quarterback, Rocco said, Walker's our guy, but you always have that thought that maybe there was somebody else.
And as from a fan's perspective, it's exciting to also see the Blue Hens identify an area of need and actually try to do something about it. You know, maybe it doesn't work out, but they're at least trying to bring somebody in who can change things compared to just having Joe Walker be the guy the last couple of years without much competition. They did bring in Blake Rankin, but he played sparingly. You like seeing Danny Rocco come in here and say, okay, we don't really have a quarterback. We'll get things settled in the spring. All right, let's bring somebody in. You know, maybe this guy's not a superstar. Maybe he's not Pat Devlin. Maybe he's not Joe Flacco, but I find it hard to believe he'd be any worse than Joe Walker has been in the past couple of years. Or, like you said, Teddy, maybe Joe Walker elevates his play because he's got a guy pushing him.
It is almost time for Cage Rage. Everybody gets a second to rage. We did not do Cage Rage last week because we had some issues, but we are back and ready to roll this week.
My cage rage is on Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors, 3-0, well on their way to a sweep and possibly a NBA championship. The first for Kevin Durant and the second for Curry, Clay, Draymond and company, Steve Kerr as well as the Golden State Warriors coach. Look, a lot of conversation has happened in the last 12 months about Kevin Durant making the controversial move to join Golden State Warriors. I have to disagree with some of the things that have been said. I think it's unfair. Look, I was one of the guys who criticized Kevin Durant when he first came to Golden State and leaving Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder. But what he has been doing, not only this playoff, not only in the regular season, but in these finals, in these three games of the NBA Finals, in the five games against the Miami Heat in the 2012 Finals, Kevin Durant has been absolutely ridiculous, and yes, in a good way. He has been insane. He has been good. Talks with Paul Pierce, he's mentioned, jokingly or not, about Kevin Durant, the new face of the NBA. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far yet, but Kevin Durant has established himself in this league as an elite player. It's time to let all that previous hate go. Kevin Durant has proved, and the Warriors, super team or not, this team is legit, that this finals is earned. This championship will be earned, and this final MVP most likely will be earned. Kevin Durant, congratulations on whatever you're doing and hopefully winning an NBA Finals MVP and a championship.
I'll keep it with the NBA Finals and Kevin Durant. And Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce, for this, who won a championship with the Celtics and is doing some commentary for ESPN, said on the set the other day that there is passing of the torch, and that KD is the new number one, overtaking LeBron James, and he is wrong on so many levels. To go with you, to agree with you, Amid, Kevin Durant, if he wins this championship, as it looks like the Warriors are on their way to do so, deserves a ton of credit. He's played well. People are going to bash him for moving to Golden State and playing for a team that beat him. But come on, LeBron James is the best player in the NBA, and he will remain the best player in the NBA and in the world. Kevin Durant is number two, and he may not be too far behind, but LeBron James, by far, has kept his team in this game, in the series, and without LeBron James, the Cavaliers would be on the fringe of making the playoffs. I said it. Even with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, I think that the Cavaliers would not be a rock-solid playoff team. So LeBron James, by far, is the best player in the NBA, in the world. Paul Pierce, you got to rethink yourself a little bit. I don't know if there's any animosity based on when you played him, but LeBron James, still number one.
We're going to have a little overlap, I think, in our cage rages here, Teddy, but I think we're on the right end of this debate. Mike and Mike used to have a segment called Overreaction Theater, and I think those Kevin Durant takes fit into that. Kevin Durant's been doing this for 5, 6, 7 years. We're just finally seeing it on this NBA final stage with some very, very talented teammates around him. But LeBron James is certainly the best player in the NBA, and for those criticizing LeBron for his performance in the last game of the NBA Finals and for this series as a whole, simply don't see what's going on the court right now. He's playing on a team that is far less talented than the Golden State Warriors, flat out. LeBron James, in his career, is averaging 27-7-7. In this series, he's averaging over 30 and almost a triple-double throughout this series. He's one of the best players of all time. It's crazy to have these Michael Jordan-LeBron debates and then all of a sudden throw KD above him. And to put blame on him for these three losses in this series is misguided. He's three assists away from having triple-doubles in every single game. He has the most triple-doubles in NBA Finals history, tied with a guy named Magic Johnson. And, to your point, Teddy, when the Cleveland Cavaliers have not had LeBron James on the court in the last three seasons, in the regular season, they are 4-23. He means a lot more to this Cavaliers team than I think anybody around the league means to their individual team. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love are good players, but they are not to the same caliber as Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. LeBron James is what makes this team competitive. It takes a super team, a team talented like maybe we haven't seen before, just to take down LeBron James. He's certainly the best player in the league and deserves no blame should the Cavaliers lose this series.
You know what? Here's the thing. People love to build people up and then tear them down. People love to look at LeBron one day and say he's the best, and then when KD beats him, say he's the best, and then say LeBron's better than Jordan, and then say no, KD's better than people love to do that. But if you had to just stare at this finals and see what's happened, I think it's in an easy way you can say LeBron James has played a great finals. He's done such a good job leading his team, but as you said, Brandon, he is facing one of the best teams ever with so much firepower, and there's only so much he can do. And Kevin Durant's played and had a nice couple games amid, and LeBron James has kept his team in this series, and it's probably played out as it should. People will say the Cavs blew it last night. People will say the Warriors' magic came back again. But the Warriors are the better team, and it's not even close. LeBron sure. James is still a sensational player, and he's the best player around. So for all people love to come out with all these bold statements, but if you really take a step back and look at it and say, it is historical what this Golden State team is doing. It is absolutely historical, and there's only so much LeBron can do.
And almost equally historical is what LeBron James has continued to do in his playoff career. I know I'm not even a big LeBron James fan. I know that people are probably going crazy hearing all this LeBron James love, and we'll move on to the Warriors in a few minutes, but his stat lines through these three games, 28-15-8 in Game 1, 29-11-14 in Game 2, 39-11-9 in Game 3. I mean, there's nothing else you could ask LeBron James to do in this series. His team is simply not as good as the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have four All-Stars. The Cavs have three. The Warriors have two MVPs. The Cavs have one. The Warriors have two-way players up and down their roster. The Cavaliers have one two-way player, and that's LeBron James. Right now, I thought this series would be a lot closer. I didn't think the Warriors were this much better than the Cavaliers. I thought the Warriors were going to win, but I picked them in six games. But this series goes to show, when they turn it on, the Golden State Warriors are head and shoulders above every other team in the NBA. And it doesn't matter if you have LeBron James on your team. It'd be interesting to play a game of who you could add to this Cavaliers team to make them equally as good to the Warriors. And I think we'd get up there as far as the list of top talent in the NBA. It might take a Kawhi Leonard or Anthony Davis to even make it close, which would be unrealistic scenarios. Right now, put anybody against these Warriors, and it's going to be a tough matchup.
All valid points, absolutely. Amid, last week on the show, this is what I said. I'm not going to quote, I don't remember specifically, but I said something like, I see this series going back and forth. I'm going to predict seven games. I think this is going to be really good. But kind of with you, Brandon, I didn't anticipate this. I anticipated a close back-and-forth series. Now, Amid, you told me off-air that you thought that this actually had the potential to be a series that Golden State runs away with. You want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, it's just something I wasn't ready to say on air, but I mean, all along...
You should have got out ahead of this.
I should have got ahead of this. I would have looked like a genius. But I never had the Cavs winning more than one game. I originally said Warriors in five. I thought it'd be kind of reckless to say, you know, with the best player on your team, by the way, to say Warriors sweep, Warriors in four. But I'm not surprised by what's happening. 3-0, they're just being outmatched. It looks good on paper, but you just have way too much. I said it the other day, one of your guys gets in foul trouble for the Warriors, and in comes in Kevin Durant. What a luxury that is to have, is when you have to give Kevin Durant maybe 2 minutes of rest and not three,
But that's what happens as far as depth goes, even though there's only really four or five players that I would say are really great for the Warriors. That's just how it's been. I see the Cavs maybe trying to get one more game. I'm not trying to pick games quite yet, but you look at it, and I have to stick with my original thought, five games for the Warriors.
And to that point where you talk about Kevin Durant coming off the bench for Draymond Green, we can go on and on about all the ways that Kevin Durant has made this a better team, but one thing that he's done is he's given them insurance for Draymond Green. Basically, if Draymond Green has to come out, if he gets suspended, if he gets in foul trouble, whatever the reason, they can put Kevin Durant into that Draymond Green role at center and be just as efficient, if not better. He had 5 blocks in game 2. He's made himself into an elite rim protector. He can switch on to anybody. He was guarding Kyrie Irving in some crunch time situations last night. He's been guarding LeBron James all series long and doing a phenomenal job. What he's been doing on the defensive end is almost as impressive as what he's been doing offensively, and it just gives them another option. They have so many options on both ends of the floor. They can switch everything, and there's just not much you can do.
There's not. I don't want to get nostalgic, but I want to bring something up. You know when we hear about Michael Jordan, the greatest player of all time, and people describe that Bulls team back when, I guess, we were all born around then in 95, 96, 97, and you have a tough time picturing it, and you could say, oh yeah, Michael Jordan, best of all time, but not growing up watching a player and a team like that play, you have a tough time kind of conceptualizing it in your sports memory. I feel like this Warriors team right now, 20 years down the road, we may be saying things like what people are saying about Michael Jordan and that Bulls team. Now, there will be differences.
True.
But moving forwards, like, again, not to get all sentimental, but this is history happening in front of us.
Well, and a lot of people will disagree with this, but you can make a case that this is the best 3-year run by a team ever. But they didn't win that championship in the middle, so a lot of people will throw that away. But you have 67 wins, 73 wins, and 67 wins, a team that might go 16-0 in this postseason, which nobody's ever done before. Nobody had 73 wins before. And what they're doing, they're changing the game of basketball. Steph Curry himself, but this team as a whole, this is probably, at least in my opinion, this is the most fun brand of basketball to watch, where everybody on the floor has to be able to shoot. Everybody has to be skilled. You can't just be big, fat, and a guy in the middle of the court to be valuable to your team. You have to be able to do everything. If you can't shoot over 30% from three, you're useless. If you're Tristan Thompson, you're useless in this series. They made the center position dead, but everybody has to be talented on both ends of the floor. I think it's very fun to watch. I would almost say the barrage is from three when Steph Curry pulls up from 5 feet behind the line is just as exciting, if not more, than a slam dunk. I'm with you, Teddy. I'm with you.
And you know, as all of this is said, there are people who are going to say, well.
And here's the thing, too. In 20 years, maybe there'll be a team that's way better than the Warriors, and we'll be the ones hung up on the Warriors and be like, well, he's not Steph Curry. He's not LeBron James.
Yeah.
The way people say that about MJ or about Magic or whoever.
And like in what Amid talked about in Cage Rage, people are going to have an asterisk by Durant's championship because they'll say, you got beat by the Warriors, so you go and beat them. Put that aside. I don't care. Okay, forget about it. Sure. That may very well be a conversation, but that's not the conversation that we're having right now, and it's not the conversation that probably should be happening. Because the conversation that should be happening is that the Warriors are by far the best team around right now, and they've played like that for several years, and likely will continue to play like that for the years in the foreseeable future. There's no team that is anywhere near as good as them. Forget about LeBron and how amazing he has been. This team has been sensational, and that, in isolation, in its own, is enough to deserve a ton of credit and merit accomplishment on accomplishment and conversation and potentially go down in the history books for a number of things. So it's kind of taking this, all of this stuff about LeBron and Durant and the Warriors and the Spurs and the East is bad and Kawhi Leonard was hurt. It's taking all of this away and it's saying, here's the little bubble. Watch how the Warriors play. This team is sensational, and you should appreciate it.
Yeah, soak it in. Because, like you said, years from now, this is what we remember about these years. It was unfortunate that the last three series had to be blowouts, and the playoffs as a whole were not entertaining at all, but I had a lot of fun watching that game last night, And the Golden State Warriors, even when they blow teams out, they're fun to watch. And with the Kevin Durant thing, name me a superstar that's won something without another at least elite talent on his team. Every single player who's won a championship has somebody else. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and he had a loaded team. The Showtime Lakers had three All-Stars. Everybody has a 1A, 1B scenario that wins a championship. You can't do it without that. Now we're just seeing a team that has four of them. But give some credit to the Golden State Warriors. Three of those guys were drafted. A lot of people had a chance to draft Draymond Green. A lot of people had a chance to draft Klay Thompson. Even Steph Curry, there were point guards drafted ahead of him in the top 10. So they found the right players. They found the right way to play these players. They could have traded Klay for Kevin Love. They didn't do that. And it's all worked out for them.
And isn't it funny that during the season, last season, this season, people look at this team and they say, oh, this team is really good. But there's always something that they're not good at or something that they did wrong. And maybe finally now, whether it's today, whether it's tomorrow, when do they play? They'll play on Saturday.
Friday is the next
Friday.
Game.
Whether it's Saturday, the day after they win, if they win and get it done, as a lot of people think they will, and sweep and make history. Whether it's today or one of these coming days, at some point, hopefully people sit down and look at this team and they say that, and they say, this is historical, what we are watching, and it goes down and it can be compared to things that people have talked about 20 years ago that we could not see. So it's right. Almost like in 20, 25, 30 years down the road, people are going to talk about the NFL and they're going to say, what good teams do you remember? We're not going to say Jerry Rice and Steve Young and Joe Montana. We're going to say Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, because that's what we're going to remember as the team. And in the NBA, we'll remember LeBron and all of that he did and the transition to Miami and back. But just thinking maybe in that 2014 to 2017, 18, 19, who knows when, Warriors team, and say that team was unbeatable. When they were on and when they had everybody going, even the best player and some other superstars in Kyrie and Love,
absolutely,
even the best trifecta in the East with the best player in the world couldn't beat him even when they played their best game.
And you could also even go further and be like, the Warriors beat him when they turned the ball over 18 and 20 times in these games, and they still came out with the win. I think in the season we want to build up some sort of adversity or something they have to overcome. We want to say, well, how does Steph and KD fit together? How is Klay Thompson going to get his shots? Is Draymond Green going to get his shots? We had the one Memphis game where you see Draymond Green yelling at KD on the floor, and you're like, oh, panic time. But the simple fact is they won 67 games this year. They could have won more if they wanted to, and it really wasn't that big of a transition period. Kevin Durant fit seamlessly into what they wanted to do. Steph Curry took that sidestep to kind of being the second guy on the team. KD ran the motion offense, didn't play that much isolation ball like he did in Oklahoma City, and everything clicks, and they have the formula. This is the formula for every other team in the NBA to try to catch up to, because you can't win with back-to-your-basket guys against this Golden State Warriors team. They're going to run you off the floor.
And also about Steve Kerr. People, the adversity, is he going to coach? It didn't matter.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
It didn't matter. The Warriors, I think that's what we talked about last week, Amid, right? We talked about the fact that LeBron basically coaches
the Players' League.
It's a Players' League. I mean, what happened last night? I forget what they said. LeBron went on the bench. He went down. It looked like he was hurt. He goes down. He goes down. People are concerned. He goes, sits on the bench. And I'm not sure if the score in Mike Breen, Van Gundy, and Mark Jackson, the commentators on ABC, heard this or what. But the trainer went over to LeBron, and he, like, shoot him away and said, I'm going back in. So what happens to concussion protocol in that moment?
Because he should have been tested for concussion protocol. I know we're not really getting into that, but he...
That was my question.
He took a shoulder. He took a shoulder. He took a Tristan Thompson shoulder.
I was competitiveness of the series if he's out of the game.
That was my question in the moment, Amid. When LeBron went down and he goes over there, at first I didn't know if it was a head thing, and so then he comes back into the game. And when you hear the commentators say, oh, he just shooed off the trainers and walked back in. All right, I know it's a players-driven league and players can make calls and whatever, but there's protocol about something. So maybe in that case there was no concussion. And now if LeBron shooed off concussion protocol, that's a whole other conversation. But again, players-driven league. LeBron does it. The Warriors don't care. Mike Brown, Steve Kerr, they had it going either way. So it goes to show, regardless of even what LeBron did, and LeBron deserves a lot of credit for what he did last night. I mean, I thought he played another sensational game. Kyrie, too, but it wasn't enough.
Ahmed, you're a big Kobe Bryant fan. In your eyes, is LeBron James, in a historical context, risen above Kobe Bryant?
My thing always was, if he beats this team, you have to, because this is, again, could possibly end up being one of the greatest teams of all time. So yes, in that context, if that were to happen, then I would. But it doesn't look like it is, and just, you know, going off, you know, 5 finals losses, 3 finals win, you just go look at, you know, some numbers, you look at statistically, even though LeBron is better than Kobe, I can't put him there. I'll put him very close to him, but I can't put him, forget Jordan, I can't even put him above Kobe. I know the stats would say another story, but as you talk about just clutch factor, you talk about being a monster, you talk about taking over, and you talk about being dominant. You look at how Kobe maybe did it in 3 different eras, maybe the what we call Froby back in the before the 2002 days. And
the number 8 Kobe and the 24 Kobe.
Yeah, the number 8. And then you look at kind of the mid before the prime Kobe, the 2004 finals team, 2005, the 6 where he won MVP. And then you maybe look at later on Kobe post-30s where he went to 3 straight in the Western Conference. To be able to do that, people forget Kobe also went to 8 NBA finals. So, I don't know. I'll put him very, very close, Brandon. But no, he's not better than Kobe in my eyes. And I think a lot of NBA players would also agree.
Now, from LeBron's perspective, you're facing arguably the best NBA team of all time.
Sure.
In the Warriors.
At least of this era.
And
yeah.
From what we've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's going on. From his perspective, and I heard some talk about this earlier, any other team besides the Warriors in the West, and maybe even the Warriors without KD or some extraction on that team, something else, LeBron wins this, maybe he wins another one in the past, and I don't want to uphold LeBron here and say, you know what, he deserves more credit, because it looks like they're going to lose this one and they lost in the past, but he's running into history, and I just hope, like, for your sake, and Amit, and for the people who would say that it's not a matter of, like, okay, LeBron didn't get it done against the best of the best in the Warriors, because I don't know if Kobe ever faced Did Kobe ever face a team like the Warriors? I don't know. Not to discredit anything.
No.
If anything, he was that team.
Yeah, he was that team. That's a good point.
And not to discredit anything
and Teddy
Kobe
also,
did, you know.
And Teddy also, you know, LeBron's got some few years to go, so let's see what happens.
Sure.
I'm not going to end his storybook now because he still has a few years.
But I would also say, if something doesn't change in a big way, the next 2 or 3 years, what's going to...
he's not
going
to get better. He's not going
to
get better, I know that.
What's he going to do to get his team over Golden State? Right, they could get through the East next year.
Mm-hmm.
He could close his eyes and get through the East.
Yeah.
I don't see that changing.
And that's also part of it. I mean,
but what are they
going
to do
is...
to compete with Golden State?
Yeah, I don't know. You look at those things and East...
Golden State will come back.
Yeah, and that's the partially the problem, Brandon. You said he's in the East. He doesn't face that competition until he gets to the finals. And shout out to him for getting to 7 finals, but... Again, these guys aren't Penny Hardaway or Shaq or, you know, primetime D-Wade. It's just, you got to look at that competition. It's not there for LeBron James.